Our first question comes from the line of Garrett Thesis with Como. Please go ahead.
What does this mean for the Mizzou football seniors?
Well, as detailed in the infraction decision, there are several NCAA bylaws which provide for the potential for transfer for Missouri seniors. And if you take a look at page 14 of the decision, you'll see that the committee has made a recommendation for legislative relief waivers should a potential Missouri athlete seek a transfer. So there is legislation that would allow, under certain circumstances, transfers without the one-year in residency requirement.
Next question comes from the line of Daniel Jones with Columbia Daily Tribune. Your line is open, sir.
Is there an appeals process that is available for this case? And if there is, what would be just the general timeline of an appeal?
Yes, there is a process. We have an infractions appeals committee, and Missouri has the opportunity to appeal to that body. There's a briefing schedule, et cetera, that goes along with it. So that's controlled primarily by the IAC. But, you know, the time frame, obviously, it will take several months before briefs would be filed if, in fact, there's an appeal, and obviously 7 months thereafter probably for a hearing.
Thank you once again, ladies and gentlemen. If you have a question, press star 1 on your touchtone phone. Okay, we have a question from the line of Todd Lebo with Sports Radio 810. Please go ahead.
Why does this get such a severe penalty when paying recruits to come play at your school doesn't get penalties like this?
I'm sorry, your connection was just, when you repeat that, you're very soft.
Okay, I'll try a little louder. The question I have is, this sounds like something that goes on at a lot of places. If there's a tutor or somebody somewhere taking tests, we've seen it at several schools here around the Kansas City area, and we've seen a massive scope thing with North Carolina. Why does this get such severe penalty, and in so many cases where schools pay athletes to come play at their school, they don't get any kind of penalties like this?
Well, I'm certainly not going to compare cases, but in this particular case, the institution, the tutor, and enforcement all agreed that this was a level one, which is a severe misconduct case involving academic integrity, impermissible academic benefits, and unethical conduct. So the case starts off with that agreement, and the association has put in place a penalty matrix. Now, academic integrity and unethical conduct strike at the heart of the core of the NCAA values. So in this particular case, given the fact the parties acknowledged that this conduct occurred and brought the case before us, the association prescribes those penalties. So that's why the penalties were issued in this case. Now, if there are other cases, they need to be reported and investigated and brought to our committee. But there are guidelines for the types of infractions that you're discussing. But the reason we issued these penalties is because of the facts I just mentioned.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Dave Matter with the St. Louis Post. Please go ahead.
Sir, I just wanted to clarify, is it the committee's belief that the tutor acted on her own and was not compelled to conduct this fraud by her superiors or colleagues?
Yes, the decision details the facts that we considered there. Enforcement went ahead and interviewed a number of other people at the institution, and there was no evidence to corroborate or support the assertion that she was, you know, pressured or compelled to do this by others.
Next question comes from late Nathan Lawrence with KBIA. Your line is open.
Yes. Does the committee plan to pursue any further investigation against the institution or any of the individuals involved, or is it the committee's belief that this is isolated enough that it's finished now?
No, the committee itself doesn't do investigations or further analysis. We did put the institution under probation, and there is a protocol. They will be required to prepare annual reports and report on issues that stem from the decision, and that's detailed in the decision, their obligations under probation. But the committee itself doesn't do that. As far as we're concerned, you know, we've looked at the facts and we've rendered a ruling. So from our point of view, this case should be over.
Thank you. The next question comes from the line of Matt Tarnawa with Zimmer Radio Group. Please go ahead.
Yes, David, when you talk about the appeals process and things taking a few months there, this is the eve of the season for the baseball and softball programs, and they get hit with postseason bans. Do you think it's prudent for that to be coming so soon when the university might choose to appeal the action and things might not be resolved by the time that the postseasons in those two athletic events would be maybe occurring already?
Well, if an appeal is filed, there is the ability to try and seek a stay. So that would be the IAC's problems. But when an institution appeals, there are certain avenues that they have available to them to seek stays.
Next question comes from Gabe Diermond with Rivals.com. Please go ahead.
Yes, sir. I'm reading the part of the report that distinguishes this specifically from the case at North Carolina, and please correct me if I'm wrong. The way I read that is that North Carolina stood by what it said and Missouri admitted violations. Had Missouri not cooperated or believed that they had no culpability for this, I mean, are they being penalized in part because they, you know, agreed with the findings prior to your ruling?
Well, I'm not going to compare the cases, but you certainly have identified a significant issue in this case, and that's when a member institution comes forward and self-reports a violation and agrees to the classification as a severe level one, there are consequences that happen. And in this particular case, I mean, Missouri did the right thing. It self-reported. It acknowledged and accepted responsibility. The decision details how we go over the aggravating and mitigating factors. And all of those are factored in, but the penalty guidelines that are put in place by the association control what we can and can't do in terms of penalties. So I would not say they were penalized. I would say that, you know, improperly or extraordinarily, the guidelines the association put in place operated as intended by the association. If they had chosen a different route, I couldn't predict what the outcome would be, but based on the facts that we received, I believe the findings were appropriate as and the penalties were appropriate as dictated by the membership.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of Nicole Auerbach with The Athletic. Please go ahead.
David, my question was very similar to the previous one, where I guess I'm just wondering if the penalties were so stiff after cooperation, self-reporting, telling the truth, does this not incentivize future cases and future schools and people to cooperate and tell the truth?
Well, I mean, one can certainly make that argument. The converse would be that hopefully more institutions would accept responsibility, as Missouri did. You know, it's the old story. The penalty matrix is put in place by the association. I can understand that when an institution receives penalties, no one likes to be penalized. But hopefully that would deter future behavior. And again, I don't want to speculate, but if an institution, you know, fails to report and conceals and doesn't tell the truth or did something to otherwise inhibit or hinder the process, then under the aggravating and mitigating factors, the penalties would be more severe than in this case.